and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan and Sudan this Thursday, July 25th, 2024. Residents of Nimule border town in eastern Equatorial State say they need medical supplies.
Out of the five prescribed drugs, I only received one from Nimule Hospital. I sustained my injuries while roofing a house. Now that I don't have money, what can I really do?
And military rivals in Sudan send mixed signals about ceasefire talks next month.
Neither one of them has been genuine or really wanted to find a solution to this war from day one. They're in a war to fight for political power, for economic power, and to escape accountability from possible persecution for current war crimes and past war crimes.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Residents in eastern Equatorial State's Nimule town say they are worried about unaffordable medical bills at private clinics. The residents say the only public hospital in the area has had a shortage of medical supplies for the last 3 months. For VOA News, Madrama James reports from Nimule, eastern Equatorial State.
Mary Peter Kalang, a resident of the Nimule suburb Rock City, says the prices of medicine and laboratory tests at the private clinics have jumped in recent days. She says that the higher prices at the private drug stores often lead to people like her to postpone medical treatments.
I came to the hospital with my three kids. All of us are sick. We have endured this sickness for 3 days at home with my kids because of the economic hardship. So today, we decided to wake up very early in the morning and walk to Nimule Hospital. Here, you may get some malaria drugs and you forego the other missing drugs from this public hospital because it's unaffordable at private clinics.
Mary, who says she is a widow, appeals to state and national government to provide medical supplies to Nimule Hospital.
I'm urging the national government to do something good for its citizens because we are very tired, sick, and even hungry. Someone cannot cultivate because of unknown gunmen. Fear of unknown is everywhere. People resorted to killing themselves. The enmity between us is like lions.
24-year-old Dominic Lokoro says he was discharged from Nimule Hospital without medication to heal his wounds sustained at a construction site. He says buying drugs from private clinic can be too expensive for a casual laborer like him.
Out of the five prescribed drugs, I only received one from Nimule Hospital. I sustained my injuries while roofing a house. Now that I don't have money, what can I really do? Therefore, I am appealing to the central government to assist people who don't have money like us.
Nimule Hospital management says that the outpatient department receives over 120 patients per day who are seeking free health care services. Nimule Hospital Medical Director, Dr. David Nyuma Sylvester, says the hospital received some medical supplies and attributed delays of more supplies to administrative procedures at the National Ministry of Health in Juba.
This hospital is a public facility. It's a government facility. And this hospital receives supplies. That means medical supplies, the drugs and the consumables from the Central Ministry of Health. So we receive supplies on a quarterly basis. That's every 3 months we do receive supplies that helps us to deliver services. In the past 3 months, due to the transition, so this change has also, in a way, I can say, affected the delivery of these services.
Mutonyi Dorin, A Ugandan national is urging the management of Nimule Hospital to restock affordable drugs because Nimule residents rely on it.
I request those one who are in like far places and who are not in this country to do what to becoming like to becoming to this hospital because they can give good care and they can give free medicine.
South Sudan's ability to provide quality health care services to communities is limited because of many factors, including reliance on donor support. The medical director at Nimule Hospital says malaria is too common in Nimule. South Sudan Ministry of Health received a significant lower budget allocation compared with other East African countries like Uganda, Kenya, and Tanzania. For VOA News, I am Madrama James reporting from Nimule border, Eastern Equatoria State.
From Nimule, we move to Nairobi, where a Kenyan entrepreneur is enabling paralyzed individuals to commute by public transport through his innovation, ACE Mobility. Users can access cars designed to allow passengers on wheelchairs to climb into the cars using a remote control. An inability to commute to work places was rated as a major challenge to persons with disabilities, especially paralytic individuals. For VOA News, Victoria Amonga reports from Nairobi.
The hustle and bustle of Kenya's public transportation is escalating as the population grows, but this sector is usually unforgiving for persons with disabilities. Brian Ndiritu is a corporate communications graduate who was born disabled. He says his mobility challenges complicate access to public buses and cabs.
It takes a lot of time to onboard, alight. So, you see, there's the whole planning. Sometimes drivers will just say, we won't carry you because, you know, you are a burden.
A burden that Kenyan startup S-Mobility is helping to lift through the vehicles that are designed to accommodate disabled passengers. The cars are fitted with a ramp that lifts wheelchairs by remote control. The drivers are also trained as caregivers for passengers with special needs, like Ndiritu.
I know that my wheelchair is safe because I'm not coming off my wheelchair. My wheelchair is safe, the travel is safe. The driver is conscious that I'm a person with disability, so there are some discussions I might not be comfortable with, maybe the cause of my disability, my private life.
Users are linked to drivers through a mobile app for $1 a kilometer. At least 500 people have downloaded the app, according to co-founder Daniel Kamau. He explains that their fleet of 15 cars are modified to include swivel seats that can be lowered to the ground, especially for the elderly when boarding the vehicles.
We're seeing a lot of interest from the conferences and summit industries. We're looking at more interest within the entertainment industry. We're also seeing a normal and day-to-day commute, and also from the employer's point of view, who are now in a push to serve and employ more people with reduced mobilities.
Kenya's 2003 Persons with Disabilities Act prohibits the denial of services, education and job opportunities to people dealing with handicaps. But Kenya's National Council for Persons with Disabilities say improper infrastructure still prevents their full inclusion in society.
The public transport in Kenya is owned by private entities, so sometimes it is difficult for them to provide effective service delivery to persons with disabilities, because for them, as private entity, they consider any accommodation for persons with disability as an expense.
Transportation experts say insufficient funding has slowed down the adoption of mobility solutions in Africa. S-Mobility was invited to pitch its business to investors at a summit in October hosted by the VUCA Group.
We're matching those types of projects with the funding, whether it's venture capital, banks, DFIs, and so on and so forth, matching them with entities that have the funding to be able to invest into these solutions so that they can get off the ground and be scaled.
Authorities say technologies like S-Mobility can help the millions of Kenyans with disabilities live easier lives. Victoria Amunga, VOA News, Nairobi.
From Health Matters, we now go to war politics. After a year of conflict, starvation and desperation continues to escalate in Sudan. This week, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken asked the Sudan Armed Forces and the paramilitary Rapid Support Forces to participate in a ceasefire talks in August, mediated by the United States and the Saudis. Samar Salman is a Sudanese analyst. She tells my colleague Douglas Mpoga that the conflict in Sudan is one of the worst humanitarian catastrophes in the world.
The situation in Sudan is absolutely out of hand, and it is one of the worst humanitarian catastrophes in the world right now. That doesn't mean that there's no solution possible. Of course there's a solution possible, but it requires political will and it requires adequate and sufficient pressure from the international community.
Talking of political will, the two belligerents have not been willing to resolve this issue, but now there are reports that the command of the Sudanese paramilitary rapid support forces has agreed to next month's ceasefire talks. Is there a way the international community can urge these parties to reach an agreement?
Well, Douglas, the two generals, General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, who is the commander of the Sudanese armed forces and the de facto head of the Sovereign Council of Sudan, and his rival, General Hemeti, Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, who's the commander of the RSF, the Rapid Support Forces paramilitary, neither one of them has been genuine or really wanted to find a solution to this war from day one. They're in a war to fight for political power, for economic power, and to escape accountability from possible persecution for current war crimes and past war crimes, including, the 2003-2005 Darfur genocide. So neither of them actually wants to find a solution to this war. The solution has to come from extreme pressure from the neighboring countries and the international community, unfortunately. And there are certain tools that can be used to put that pressure on.
How would you describe the impact to the citizens of the country, given that now there's a lack of medical facilities and people are maybe running out of food soon, according to UN agencies?
So the Sudanese people are dying from bullets, from bombings, from drone attacks. They're dying from hunger. They're dying from lack of medical attention. They're dying for all sorts of reasons. They're even dying from shock and trauma and from the sight of seeing family members being raped and being shot and their homes being looted and burned. And so there are direct ways that you can be a victim of the Sudanese war, and there are very indirect ways that you can be a victim of the Sudanese war.
That's Salma Salman, a Sudanese analyst and the president of a group calling itself Educated Sudanese Professionals. She spoke to my colleague Douglas Mpugwa earlier today. You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, the Israeli Prime Minister's visit to Washington attracted protesters. Find out why after the break.
Hello, listener of South Sudan in Focus. We have an exciting new segment dubbed Words of Wisdom. We want to hear your thoughtful proverbs that echo through your community. This is another chance for you to share wisdom from your roots. All you need to do is record a proverb in a language of your choice, tell us its English translation and what it means. Keep it brief, authentic, and represent your community. Your recorded proverb shall be sampled on South Sudan in Focus every Wednesday. Send your recording via our WhatsApp number, +1 202 630 8011. That is +1 202 630 8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. U.S. President Joe Biden on Wednesday explained to American citizens and to the world why he decided to stand why he decided not to stand for election in 2024 presidential race. Biden, speaking from Oval Office, also outlined what urgent challenges he sees as the nation prepares towards a November vote. VOA's White House correspondent Anita Powell reports.
U.S. President Joe Biden on Wednesday explained to American citizens and to the world why he decided not to stand for re-election in the 2024 presidential race. Biden, speaking from the Oval Office, also outlined what urgent challenges he sees as the nation careens toward a November vote. VOA White House correspondent Anita Powell reports. U.S. President Joe Biden made the stunning decision to exit the presidential race from behind a screen, choosing to drop the news online. 3 days later, in an Oval Office speech that was at times hopeful, at times determined, and at times wistful, he explained why. Biden spoke of his 5 decades in public office, touted his presidential record of domestic and political achievements, but then called for energetic new leadership to face tomorrow's challenges.
But nothing, nothing can come in the way of saving our democracy. That includes personal ambition. So I've decided the best way forward is to pass the torch to a new generation. That's the best way to unite our nation. You know, there is a time and a place for long years of experience in public life. There's also a time and a place for new voices, fresh voices, yes, younger voices. And that time and place is now.
Biden also thanked Vice President Kamala Harris, who has taken to the campaign trail with his endorsement and enough delegate pledges to net the nomination. He described her as experienced, tough, and capable, but added, "The choice is up to you." He did not name-check the Republican in the race. But analysts say Biden's stark warnings all point to one man. Jennifer Murcia is a professor of communication and journalism at Texas A&M University.
He talked about polarization. He talked about violence and political violence. Those are all things that harken back to Donald Trump and his presidency. He talked about the threats facing the nation when he first took office, January 2021. And so that was certainly about Donald Trump. But yeah, this wasn't a place for him to talk about Donald Trump. It wasn't a place for him to give a campaign speech.
The president said his job will now focus on domestic challenges like civil rights and voter freedom, gun safety reforms, the quest to end cancer, and Supreme Court reform. He also cited myriad challenges the U.S. faces abroad, with wars raging in Gaza and Ukraine, and China becoming more emboldened in the Indo-Pacific. These foreign fires, analysts say, are likely to burn in the minds of concerned voters. Thomas Schwartz is a history professor at Vanderbilt University.
That's really the concern I think people will have, is how does a lame duck president deal with foreign policy crises?
We'll find out Thursday when Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu visits the White House. The Israeli leader is also holding 2 other meetings while in the U.S., with Harris and Trump. But for the final act of this presidency, Biden remains the protagonist on America's biggest stage. Jim Kessler is executive vice president for policy for Third Way.
He's like an athlete that is going to make the Hall of Fame and is retiring and, you know, gets the cheers from the crowds, finally, you know, for a long 50-year tremendous career.
Biden clearly understood that this address would be a dramatic peak. So he used his final words to break the fourth wall with a message as old as America.
Great thing about America is here, kings and dictators do not rule. The people do. History is in your hands. The power is in your hands. The idea of America lies in your hands.
Anita Powell, VOA News, Washington.
Still in Washington, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu addressed a divided U.S. Congress Wednesday, with many Democratic lawmakers boycotting his speech and protesters surrounding the U.S. Capitol. But congressional Republicans say the speech was key to reaffirming the U.S. commitment to its Middle East ally in the midst of the 10-month-old war with Hamas. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson has more.
For the first time since the October 7th Hamas attack that left 1,200 Israelis dead and some 240 hostages captured, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu addressed U.S. lawmakers in person Wednesday.
It's a clash between those who glorify death and those who sanctify life. For the forces of civilization to triumph, America and Israel must stand together.
Calling anti-Semitism the world's oldest hatred, Netanyahu spoke directly to protesters.
When the tyrants of Tehran, who hang gays from cranes and murder women for not covering their hair, are praising, promoting, and funding you, you have officially become Iran's useful idiots.
Gaza's health ministry, which does not distinguish civilians from combatants, says more than 39,000 Palestinians have died since the beginning of hostilities. Netanyahu addressed the International Criminal Court's allegations of Israeli war crimes.
Prosecutor of the International Criminal Court has shamefully accused Israel of deliberately starving the people of Gaza. This is utter, complete nonsense.
Several high-profile Democrats, including Vice President Kamala Harris and former Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi, did not attend the speech. Senator Jack Reed, who serves on the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence, explained his reasons for boycotting on Tuesday.
Netanyahu's made common cause with far-right extremists who pursue their own agendas at the expense of Israel's security. These extremists have been elevated to some of the highest cabinet positions in the government and have encouraged Netanyahu's most misguided policies.
Netanyahu was welcomed by congressional Democratic and Republican leadership Wednesday.
This is a very important time. Our bipartisan congressional leadership recognized it as such and invited him here because our dear ally Israel is in an existential fight for its very existence, and that fight extends to every one of its borders.
Some families of Israeli hostages protested the speech, calling on Netanyahu to agree to a U.S. proposed ceasefire. He outlined his own vision for a post-war Middle East.
The day after we defeat Hamas, a new Gaza could emerge. My vision for that day is of a demilitarized and de-radicalized Gaza. Israel does not seek to resettle Gaza, but for the foreseeable future, we must retain overriding security control there.
Netanyahu's address is key to maintaining U.S. support for Israel, but comes at a time when domestic American politics is taking center stage.
He is going to be trying to at least halt an erosion of support among Democrats and try to build credit with Republicans who he assesses are much more likely to be in power after the November elections.
Netanyahu is set to meet with U.S. President Joe Biden and Vice President Harris, as well as former President Donald Trump, later this week. Catherine Gibson, VOA News.
As Benjamin Netanyahu addressed both houses of the U.S. Congress on Wednesday, thousands of people protested outside the Capitol, denouncing the Israeli Prime Minister for Israel's war against Hamas. Robin Guess reports from Washington.
Thousands of protesters traveled from several states and many countries to chant and demonstrate against Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Kalim Hawa came from New York City.
The point of our mobilization today is to send a message that Benjamin Netanyahu is a war criminal. He's not welcome in D.C., he's not welcome in the U.S., that Israel has become a pariah state because of the way they have conducted the ongoing genocide of the Palestinian people in Gaza.
Many of the groups are protesting the war in Gaza, the number of Palestinian deaths, and the failure to secure the return home of all the Israeli hostages. Many called for Netanyahu's arrest, accusing him of war crimes. Here's anti-Netanyahu protester Lou Jane Lamasri from Damascus, Syria.
And he has this the comforts of being invited to the U.S. He should be in handcuffs. He should be in jail, and he should be charged with his crimes and having to pay for his crimes against the Palestinians.
Security outside the Capitol was boosted by reinforcements from the New York City Police Department.
We are committed to liberation!
The groups who organized the larger protests were solidly anti-Netanyahu. However, there were a handful of supporters. Jeremy from Canada gave only his first name.
So I'm on the pro-Israel side, the pro-American side, the pro-Canadian side, the pro-Western value side, and I'm against terrorists who hide beneath their civilians, start wars they can't finish.
They were vastly outnumbered. This pro-Netanyahu protester only goes by Flag Guy.
Well, I'd like to see how he plans on finishing Hamas once and for all, because I think that they are the problem. And then once that's over, we can talk about peaceful solutions.
Opinion polls have shown Americans remain deeply divided over Israel's war with Hamas, with roughly equal numbers who think the U.S. is doing too little to help Palestinians, too much, or just the right amount. Robin Guess, VOA News.
From politics, we go to sports, where rights groups have accused French authorities of social cleansing before the Paris Olympics by uprooting migrants, sex workers, and others around the capital, undermining promises of making these games the most inclusive ever. The government says it is simply trying to address a long-standing problem. Lisha Bryan has more from the French capital, Paris.
An early morning evacuation of a migrant camp on the edge of Paris. Its residents are uncertain about what's next. Abdoulaye Sow, a migrant from Guinea, says authorities told them to come here and they would find housing for them. With the Olympic Games, he says, we can't stay here. They're going to resettle us somewhere. These kinds of evictions are not new. Rights groups have criticized them before. But activists question the size and the timing of this latest campaign, coming right before the Paris Olympics.
How we describe all this, because it's not only this week, it has started long before, it's called, we call it the social cleansing of Paris. So it's basically because of the Olympics, the will to empty the streets of all misery and poverty.
Borsati's charity is part of an activist network called The Other Side of the Medal. It claims hundreds of people have been relocated in the months before the Games. Not just migrants, they say, but also Roma, sex workers, and others are under pressure. Some migrants have reportedly been sent to locations far from the capital, losing precarious jobs and access to social services. French authorities say migrants can choose where they want to go. Adeline Savi is chief of staff of the Île-de-France prefecture around Paris. She says authorities have been doing these operations every week for years. They offer shelter in the Île-de-France region to people living in difficult and unsanitary conditions. She says authorities also send people regularly to other French regions because emergency shelters in Paris are saturated. So they propose to people who have just arrived without any attachments to Paris to try their luck elsewhere. The evacuations come amid rising anti-immigration sentiments in France, boosting the popularity of the far-right National Rally Party. Paris's leftist city hall blames national authorities for not providing migrants with enough solutions. Paris deputy mayor Lamia El Arraj says it's been months since the city hall has asked the government to take control of the situation, which is under their exclusive competency. She says city authorities continue to offer migrants places for shelter and support, but the state needs to take its responsibilities. For now, these migrants will be offered a place to stay around Paris, but they could well be back on the streets when the games are over. Lisa Bryant, VOA News, Paris.
That's all we had for you on our menu for this Thursday, July 25th, 2024. We now leave you with the song Bambe Makaimot by Simon Kera from Western Equatorial State. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer Bill Bass, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Zamani motoro zede matoturu dumara. Zamani matara zede matoturu dumara.